Hey, and welcome to That's My Purse Pod, the podcast all about King of the Hill. I'm Jason.
And I'm Jimmy.
So have you done anything interesting lately, like any interesting movies, video games, new songs that I should check out, anything like that?
New songs. I don't know if I've been really into anime opening and ending themes. I'm creating like a little playlist of them to kind of pump me up in the morning. So that's something. I did go watch the new, I guess, is it called the Fantastic Beasts movies? I still call it Harry Potter movies, but the Secrets of Dumbledore or Dumbledore, whatever his name is. I saw that movie this week.
Nice. How was it? Without no spoiler review.
It's long. It's a long movie, and I don't know if I could recommend it or just like wait for it to get on HBO Max. So, because I believe it, because aren't the Harry Potter movies like Warner Brothers?
I think it would appear on HBO. Would appear on HBO Max because it is their property.
Yeah, if they're doing the same window for as they did Batman, which is like a 45-day window, I believe. So I think you could wait the 45 days. Just pump yourself up for Doctor Strange, and you should be fine.
Yeah, I agree. So I've never really been into the Harry Potter stuff. I know that's like weird to say because I seem like the type of person who would be into all that fantasy stuff, but I have never really gotten into it. But at the same time, I wouldn't mind. I know I have no excuse now because I do have HBO Max, and they have the entire Harry Potter library on there now, so I could like take a weekend to just binge them all if I wanted to, but then I'd have to want to. But I don't know, maybe I will, just so I can understand what everybody's talking about and what all the deal's about.
I don't know if it's going to have the same, because I feel like there was a time. There was like a Harry Potter time. And then I don't know if it's still like, now that you're older, it's different. I don't know. You watch it and then you let me know. Maybe that's, I guess that's the best way to figure it out.
Yeah, that's fair. So with the actor change, do you think it affected the movie at all? Because I know that's what a lot of people were talking about, was like, you know, Grindelwald is no longer, or Johnny Depp's no longer Grindelwald. It was Mads Mikkelsen. Isn't he it now?
Yeah, that's the new Grindelwald.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess my only thing is they made Johnny Depp look crazy as Grindelwald. They like bleached his hair and gave him contacts, and he looked like, you, if you saw that guy walking down the street, you're like, evil villain here. But for Mads Mikkelsen, they were just like, you just look like you. They didn't do anything crazy to his hair. They didn't give him contacts. And I'm just like, was that a Johnny Depp choice or like the studio choice?
Oh, that was absolutely a Johnny Depp choice.
And I don't know where I fall on the whole controversy with Johnny Depp and Amber Heard. But I'm kind of in the boat right now where I'm just like, if you fire one, you have to fire the other. I don't know if this is going to make us controversial podcast now, but I feel like they should have fired both of them, and it would just made a messy situation a little cleaner.
Yeah, I don't know much about it either. I do remember, we were both at that Comic-Con where, what was it, 2018? So Marvel didn't appear, but DC Warner Brothers did. And they did the whole weird thing with Johnny Depp and Grindelwald where the screen went black and then all of a sudden he showed up in character and we all had, what was it, like bracelets or something that as he waved his wand, they started glowing. And that was a little weird, but all right, I guess.
I mean, I've heard interesting things about that year because later on they brought out DC hero stuff, and they brought out the cast of Aquaman, and Amber Heard is in that cast. I heard that they had to be like exited and entered through different doors so they wouldn't run into each other. It's just like, it's a lot of work going down, and I don't know. And neither of them are, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're so amazing in these parts that no one else could play them. I'm like, Well, clearly Johnny Depp was replaceable, but I think Amber Heard is a little replaceable in Aquaman as well.
Yeah, I feel like, and I feel that about most superheroes, to be honest, in like superhero movies. Like, if they change the actor, I don't like. There's a few where I don't think they could ever change. But most of them, like, if they gave us a new Captain America, I'd probably be all right with it. If they gave and especially like side characters, like if all of a sudden somebody else was Pepper Potts, then I would have probably been like, okay, whatever. So yeah, like if they changed Mira to a different actress, I probably, and I think most people would be like, all right.
Yeah, I mean, no one really was like freaking out when they changed Rhodey in the Iron Man movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Grant, we only saw him in one film, so I guess it was hard to get attached to him. But like, oh, this is actually a good conversation piece we can have before we go into the episode. Who are like some characters that you think can never be replaced, or you'll just have a hard time accepting their replacement? Like, to me, it'd be like Robert Downey Jr. is Iron Man. Hugh Jackman is Wolverine. Ryan Reynolds is Deadpool. Like, to me, it'd be hard to replace those characters with a different actor.
Man, this is a tough one. Gosh. I'm trying to think of characters. Man, I feel like I hold no one sacred. Everyone's out.
I'm going to have a hard time accepting a new Wolverine. Like, I know it's inevitable. And that's what's going to happen, but I won't be happy about it.
I do think I have preferences. Like, Patrick Stewart is the better Professor X, in my opinion. And Ian, is his name Ian?
Ian McKellen, yeah.
McKellen. He's the better Magneto, I think. Oh, I mean, like, could anyone else play Frodo? Like, could you see anyone else besides Elijah Woods as Frodo now?
Maybe a younger Patton Oswalt, but yeah.
And like, I guess the same for Gandalf. Like, he'll always be Gandalf to me. Like, I couldn't see anyone else being Gandalf.
Yeah, definitely. There are some people where their actor is like synonymous with the role, and it would be impossible to see somebody else taking up that position, or it'd just be hard for you to imagine somebody else taking up that position.
Yeah, and like, but we're in the world of like reboots and stuff, so I also feel like nothing is sacred to Hollywood as well.
That's true. That's very true. I just like, if they had whoever, I'm not even going to throw a name out there, but if they had somebody else coming out as Tony Stark, I would immediately just like, I think eventually I'd get used to it. Like, it's not like I'd riot against the movie or whatever, but I'd be like, oh no, that's not Robert Downey Jr. He's just never going to be the same. But then, you know what? I might be wrong, because I felt like the same way about some other characters. Like when they, I still am a fan, but I wouldn't say I'm as big of a fan as I used to be. But like Christian Bale, Batman, when like they announced the new Batman, I was like, I just can't imagine somebody other than Christian Bale being Batman, because I thought he did the role really well. But I think I was proven wrong twice, because I think Ben Affleck did Batman well, surprisingly. And I definitely think Robert Pattinson did Batman well.
Yeah, I really enjoy both their Batmans. I feel like we didn't give Ben Affleck a chance. But I feel, have we been conditioned to just let go of Batmans? I feel like there's been so many Batmans in my life that I've just been conditioned to just not hold them sacred.
That's true. There's been at least 7 different, maybe 8 different live action Batmans in our lifetime.
Man, I don't know. I can't think. And James Bonds. They're always changed. I've had like, what? I guess just 2. Pierce Brosnan and Daniel Craig, but they feel like they can change.
Yeah. Well, they've been cast a lot. I think it's also because we've only had one Wolverine for like 10 years. We've only had one Iron Man for like 11 years or whatever. So it's hard for us to imagine somebody else taking up that role. But yeah. And I'm convinced that Deadpool was written to be played by Ryan Reynolds. Like that just moved in too well. Like, he just fit into that role so well.
I feel like he made it his own. Like, and I think that's a smart, just thinking of Ryan Reynolds as a business person. Like, that's, he's really smart. Like, he cornered Deadpool. Like, he makes everything that Deadpool related, he like wants his hand in that somehow. And it's pretty smart. Like, because now you can't separate the two. It just feels like he is Deadpool. But I don't know. When you think back about Ryan Reynolds, I think of rom-coms mostly. There was like that long period mm-hmm. he was only in rom-coms.
Yep. Then he finally... He's definitely a person who's had more bad movies than good movies, but, you know, you got to give him a credit for keep on trying, and he does every once in a while put out a great one. But yeah, now we can talk about the lesser-known MCU characters of King of the Hill and talk about Returning Japanese Part 2. So where we left off, the door opens, they're at the apartment of the woman in the wallet, and they see essentially what amounts to a Japanese version of Hank. After the awkward moment passes of them yelling and kind of being in shock, Cotton introduces himself, and he's like, "Hey, I'm your father," and the man's just not super interested. He says his name's Junichiro, which, funny enough, Cotton just can't pronounce. I don't think he ever gets to the point of being able to properly pronounce it throughout the episode. And, you know, he lets everybody know, "Oh, yeah, this is, I'm your father, and I was with your mother," and stuff like that. And, you know, he's like, "Oh, she is in Nagoya enjoying cherry blossoms," which I found interesting because if the beginning of the episode took place in Memorial Day, which would have been late May, so they're probably in Japan early June. Like, the cherry blossoms, I don't think are around at that time, but I know somebody, like, I'm going to look it up later, and there's probably going to be, like, some cherry blossom reserve or whatever in Nagoya that goes year-round. But anyway, he's like, "Yeah, it's not there." And so Cotton's like, "Oh, you know, that's all right. Come to our hotel. We have a fancy restaurant. Come to dinner tomorrow, and we can eat food. They have a $60 burger, but that'll be great for you. You know, you're my son." And so they leave. He gives them a card, and, you know, Hank confronts Cotton about, you know, having a son that he didn't know about, and Cotton tells the entire story. So after American victory in Japan in World War II, and after Cotton lost his shins, of course, he's sent to a hospital. They sew his feet to his knees, which I don't know if that is standard procedure for such a injury, but okay. And that's where he meets Michiko, this woman. She is a Japanese nurse who is assigned to, like, take care of him and drain the pus, I guess, out of his knees or whatever, which is still very gross. But yeah, so it becomes one of those love at first sight situations. And he's like, "We were forbidden to fraternize with the conquered women, but they kept their romance hidden, and, you know, they're hooking up and stuff." And then, of course, eventually Cotton is shipped back to America. It looks like it's super sudden because he doesn't get a chance to necessarily say goodbye to Michiko. And then, of course, he tried to stay behind, but he was knocked out and forced onto the boat. And, you know, he left Michiko behind and never looked back, but he clearly wanted to. So, yeah, and I guess now they have, he left not only his heart, but he left a son behind. Back to the hotel. Oh, go ahead.
Do you think if he would have stayed with her, this would have been like a softer, different Cotton than we have now? Like, this is the moment we get current Cotton?
You know, that is a very good question. Like, yeah, if Cotton were to have stayed behind and stayed with Michiko and, like, started a life with her and got married and all that stuff and raise Junichiro, would he be a much kinder, gentler guy? That is a very good question. I'm not sure.
Because it feels like he was, like, the way he talks about the story or the way he's reminiscing about the story, it's just like, it feels like not Cotton, not the Cotton I know.
Yeah. I agree. It does definitely seem like a completely different Cotton, because he definitely seems like he's still kind of gruff when he's telling the stories, but he definitely seems like he's also very, very like there's just definitely the softer side of him when he's telling the story. I don't know. It's, you do bring up a good point. Like, what would happen? What would have happened had Cotton stayed behind? Would he have become a different person? And I don't know. I guess we'll never get that answer. But it is a fun thought. I think maybe he would have become a different person, but then we would have never gotten Hank. So I guess win-win or something? I don't know. But yeah, they go back to the hotel, and Hank is happy that he has a Japanese half-brother. And, you know, he's kind of reminiscing. He's like, or not reminiscing, but he's kind of like, I have a brother. Imagine that. You know, oh, there go those Hill brothers. Did you see what those Hill brothers were up to? So he's actually pretty elated at the idea that he has a brother. Bobby says he's so excited that he wants to go outside, and he goes and he finds an arcade and he does a Dance Dance Revolution, and or I guess a Dance Dance Revolution like game. I'm sure they couldn't get the license to actually put that game on there. But he's playing, and then all of a sudden a player two enters into the game, and it's this Japanese girl that he develops a crush on. And yeah, they start playing the game together, and Bobby's kind of smitten by her. Arcades are alive and well in Japan. I've never seen an arcade quite like that, where they have like, there's a giant billboard on the building that's playing the game when the people are playing Dance Dance Revolution. I've never seen that quite. I've never really seen that, but I will tell you right now, arcades are alive and well in Japan.
That's one of the main things. Like, I would love to go. I mean, I know I've talked to you about it, but going to Japan is on my list of things I really want to do. There's so many things I want to try out, like going to an arcade and attempting some DDR, or I prefer Pump It Up, but you know, I think that would be fun. I always play it when I go to Dave and Buster's.
Yeah, I remember when I was younger, growing up. I mean, it wasn't like they were on every street corner, but there were plenty of arcades still, like Dimensions and Nickel Arcade and stuff. And then as I started to get older and get into like high school, middle school and whatnot, all of a sudden you stopped seeing arcades everywhere like you used to. And I think the only arcade that existed was Dave and Buster's. And Chuck E. Cheese. And so it was nice going to Japan and you just see arcades, like, I wouldn't say like everywhere. It's not like Starbucks where it's on every corner or whatever, but you don't have to look too far to find an arcade in Japan. Like, you, if you walk for 10 minutes, you'll easily find one. Later that night, everybody's eating dinner like they said they would. Junichiro's there, as well as Michiko, and I guess a third person who is Michiko's husband, I guess. They try to catch up with what happened after the war. Cotton mentioned that he went home. You know, he did a bunch of odd jobs. Then he finally got a good job installing asbestos into schools. He got married. He got married and remarried. I guess he said one hot, one not. And then he also had two kids, Hank and Good Hank. And then Michiko mentions that, you know, she struggled raising her kid as a single mom because, well, no, I mean, nobody wanted to, I guess, be with a single mom. Kind of, I guess, Japanese culture at the time. But you could also say that pretty true anywhere, because I guess in America's culture in the mid-90s or early 2000s might have been similar. But yeah, for them, it would have been even further back. It would have been like the 40s, 50s, 60s. But she eventually meets a man named Wataru, I believe is his name. And yeah, and things just kind of evened out there for her. Life tend to be a little nicer. Hank tries to like befriend Junichiro and whatnot, and he's like, oh, I work in propane. You might have seen it in our movies. And Hank's actually like acting out like holding a movie camera or whatever. You know, doing the charades thing that a lot of us idiots do when we go to another country and we don't know the language. I know I've done that myself on many times. And, you know, he asks Junichiro what he does, and Junichiro says he works on robots. Hank's having a hard time kind of connecting with Junichiro because I guess they're so different, and Junichiro's just not really all that interested either. Apparently the TV team or that crew that was there earlier on the airplane is there now, and they're recording, and they mentioned that there's this, I guess, ceremony going on later between the U.S. and the Japanese forces, the Japanese emperor throwing it together, and I guess it's kind of like a symbolic peace offering over World War II and all that good stuff, and Hank was invited. Cotton is happy, and he's kind of on cloud nine. He's just happy about everything, and finally being able to see Michiko and Junichiro and whatnot. And Cotton asks for forgiveness from Michiko and Junichiro. Junichiro just cannot forgive Cotton for having abandoned them and everything. Cotton just gets mad, and Cotton gets mad, escalates the situation, then Junichiro like renounces the Hill name, which pushes Cotton over the edge. And he claims that he redeclares war on Japan. He throws an octopus against the room and runs out. Hank says to Junichiro, "We got to get our dad." And then Junichiro's like just not interested. He's like, "With all due respect, you and your father can go to hell." Which I don't know. It just seemed Junichiro seems so soft spoken up to that point. Just having him say "go to hell" to Hank was kind of funny.
I mean, no one seems interested in this whole, like, I don't know what, I know what Cotton wanted out of this whole thing, but, like, it's like, I can't say his name, Junichiro?
Yeah.
Hank's brother, his half-brother, it's just like, well, what do you expect from him? He kind of, it was hard on him growing up with, like, him and his mom, and then they finally met someone, and, you know, Khan's not really his dad. Like, this guy is his dad, and I don't know. I don't know what Khan... I know what Khan was expecting. It's just, like, I don't know why every... Hank's brother thought that this was a good idea. You know? They must have set it up beforehand, right? The TV crew was there.
Yeah. I mean, they called the TV crew, or maybe the TV crew just camped outside of the place for a while until somebody came by or something. I don't know. But yeah, you're right. And I don't know. I mean, in Cotton's defense, and not necessarily saying that is a defensible act or whatever, but, you know, it's heavily implied that Cotton had no idea that he had a son. Would he have still abandoned him had he known? I don't know. That's for us to speculate on. But it's clear that, like, Cotton didn't know, so I don't think it was necessarily... Or it's hard for us to declare that it was intentional.
Well, I mean, I don't think it was intentional. I just think, like, everything's moving fast. I feel like Cotton wants to move it all fast, like... Let's all become friends together and be a family. And Junichiro is like, I'm not having any of this.
That's true. Like, up until that day, as far as we could tell, Junichiro and Michiko had no idea that any of this would happen. This has just been like a normal week for them or a normal month or whatever. Then just out of nowhere, Cotton shows up. And it's, what, probably been 50 years or something. So at that point, you've probably just assumed that he's never going to come back. Like, that chapter of your life is done. So, yeah, I think it's, like, startling to them. But Michiko seems to be in good spirits about it all. Like, at least that's my observation. Wataru, the new husband... I mean, we don't see much about him. I think he's indifferent to all of it. And then, of course, Junichiro's upset, but clearly Michiko still has some kind of feeling towards him. So the next day, Peggy and Bobby are going to go take a tour. I like that Peggy calls out, oh, we're going to go to Chinatown, which is an interesting choice to do in Japan. Also, I know for a fact that the Chinatown is not that close to Tokyo. There's one in Yokohama, which is the largest Chinatown in Japan, but it's in the Tokyo area, but it's like a good hour train ride or so from Tokyo Station. But anyway, Bobby gives her the slip, and she's like, oh, okay, whatever. He's like, I'm going to go back up to the hotel and take a nap. So Bobby then heads to the arcade, and he wants to be with that schoolgirl again. They do another round of dancing. Bobby checks his watch, and he's like, oh, I have to go. I need to beat my mom at the hotel or whatever. They go to a photo booth. She kisses him. The pictures print. And they agree to meet up again, like, the next day. Hank runs over to Junichiro's workplace, the factory where the robots are being made, and he mentions that, you know, hey, our dad hasn't come back tonight. And then Junichiro's like, what are you talking about? Wataru is fishing for mackerel like he does every morning. And he's like, Cotton went ahead and ran off. And, you know, Junichiro's like, I can't leave anyway. I'm the assistant manager, one of 30. I can't leave in the middle of the workday. And then, you know, Hank points out, well, you know what? If Cotton does something wrong and they realize that he is related to you, do you think people are going to want to buy robots for you or whatever? Or that's going to look good for your business? And so Junichiro relents and they decide to go and search for a Cotton and kind of calm him down. There's definitely a struggle or like a culture clash between the two because, well, I mean, Hank's lived his whole life pretty much in Arlen and he doesn't know much outside of Arlen, Texas. And then Junichiro lived his whole life in Japan and stuff. But you know, they eventually start to warm up to each other. I like how, they, you know, they're walking around and Hank sees an advertisement for a beer, like a giant beer bottle. And he's like, I could really use a beer that big right now. And then Junichiro, goes and, he gets two beers out of a vending machine, which is a thing. Beer vending machines and cigarette vending machines are a thing in Japan, even still to this day. Though you don't see them, I guess, as much as you see like soda and water, but they definitely are a thing.
Does it check your ID?
I don't think so. I've never actually bought beer from a vending machine because there's also like Family Mart and 7-Eleven and stuff and Lawson's and whatnot everywhere. So I can just go in there and buy beer. But I don't know. That's a good question because, yeah, like what's keeping a kid from just putting in some quarters or whatever, unless it's just like a honor system or something.
Yeah. I mean, a child me probably would. I feel like that's where we would have had our first beer out of the vending machine.
Yeah. Very true. Like, I figure like a lot of people would have done that if that was an American thing. But yeah, they're kind of connecting. You know, Hank asks about his job and he's like, oh, I've always been, you know, Junichiro's like, oh, I've been into robots since I was a kid. Hank asks Junichiro, do you think there are any robots that run on propane? And Junichiro's like, no. But then to show that his like shell's cracking a little bit, he's like, but there could be. And then they share a little bit, and Hank's like, you know, why haven't you ever been married? You know, a successful guy like you. And then Junichiro's like, oh, what woman would want me? I can't provide a son or a daughter. And then Hank's like, do you have a narrow urethra too? And apparently, I guess this is a genetic trait because that's something Hank has. And he's like, I can send you some stretches in the mail that can help you. Eventually, you know, the two brothers catch up to Cotton. So it's actually kind of funny early on. Hank is just like trying to get everybody's attention. It's like, yo, excuse me, sorry, excuse me. Can I talk? You know, he's just trying to get people to talk to him, but they keep walking by. And he even sees a guy in a mask, asks him for doctor, not realizing that like wearing masks in Japan, even in the 90s, was like just a normal thing people did because it was a polite thing to do. And I hope that we keep that like going on. Like, hey, if you're sick, like not like sick to where you need to be bedridden, but like, oh, you're operating at 90%, you can still go to work or whatever, but you don't want to spread the virus. Like, yeah, wear a mask. That's what they do in like Asian countries. But anyway, aside from that, you know, Junichiro is kind of upset because he's like, well, what do you expect? Nobody's going to listen to you. You're acting all crazy, annoyed. This isn't Texas. You have to act like a Japanese person. He shakes people's hands, gets some business cards. Eventually, one of the business guys called back and says, oh, they saw a shinless man run into the train station. So they head to the train station. He's boarding a train. They're trying to find him. And then Junichiro goes up to like the ticket counter and asks for information about Cotton. And the guy at the ticket counter says, oh, that's not my job. You need to talk to this other guy who's like literally right next to him. So Junichiro walks over to the other counter and asks him for information. He's like, oh, you need to talk to the ticket master. And then Junichiro's like, Japanese politeness can be sometimes very, very bureaucratic. And then Hank's like, well, you're only half Japanese. Remember, you're also half American, too. So you tell him that if you don't give him that information, you'll kick his ass. And then so in Japanese, Junichiro says that. And then he points out Cotton. The guy's all nervous and like, oh, hachi, hachi. So he's pointing at Cotton and Cotton, they turn around. Cotton's walking onto the train. And then Cotton says, oh, he's going down to the thing in Kyoto, the ceremony. And then at first Hank's like, oh, good. You calm down. You're gonna honor your commitments here. But then he's like, I'm going down to spit in the face of the emperor. And Hank's like, no, that's going to be terrible. Then so he tells Junichiro all about that. And of course, Junichiro is upset. He's like, who's going to want to do business with somebody whose father spit in the face of the emperor? So they board the next train. Back at the hotel, Bobby again tries to get away from Peggy, but Peggy won't let him this time because they're going to go seeing everything Japan has to offer, including the Disney shop, I guess. I don't know, but sounds like something Peg would do. Of course, at the arcade, the girl realizes Bobby's late and decides to dance with another boy. So a lot happened. I did like kind of the clashing of cultures there.
Yeah, I love Junichiro's kind of accepting of Hank. Mm-hmm. You know, with that propane robot. I hope one day we get to see that.
Oh, like I said, Fox is owned by Disney now, and Marvel is too. Maybe we'll get Hank into the MCU. He can be like Propane Man. He's, you know, he's captured in Laos or something, and they ask him to build like a super grill or something like that, but instead he builds a suit out of propane tanks.
I don't know. I all I think is of those, what are they, propane bots?
Or yeah.
The statues that Peggy builds in another episode.
Yeah. But yeah, Hank but, yeah. I liked seeing Hank and Junichiro just kind of warm up to each other, because at first Hank was trying to like get to know Junichiro and everything, but then Junichiro has just had no interest in getting to know Hank, which I guess is understandable because, you know, as far as Junichiro was concerned, life was just normal. And then all of a sudden, this guy claiming to be his brother shows up out of nowhere. But yeah, so they're warming up to each other. But then also Hank trying to understand the culture, because he's just like, you know, instead of just asking, I guess his thought was just like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, walk into people in the street and ask them, you know, pardon me, help me, you know, excuse me, can you help me? And stuff like that, which is not really the Japanese way of doing things. But yeah, that kind of clash of culture was funny.
I do, gosh, what was I going to say? What part did I... Clashing cultures? Now I'm lost in thought. Sorry. Oh, narrow urethras.
Yes.
I hope Hank does mail him, like, some stretches. And then now Junichiro is able to get married and have children. I feel like that should be the inspiration. He's like, I see Bobby, so I know that children is a possibility for me.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, you know, we never really see it in this series, but maybe if they do reboot it, we finally get to meet, like, Junichiro's son or something. That would be really cool.
Do you want it to look like Bobby, except just like a Japanese Bobby?
I guess. Only if Junichiro marries, like, a Japanese version of Peggy.
Oh, man. Maybe that's too weird. But I will say, though, the male gene does run strong in this family. Well, I don't know. Bobby doesn't look like Hank. at all either. Not I don't really. Know.
Nah, he does.
But he does look like Cotton. You know, like, I mean, because maybe it skips a generation. Like, I don't know. Like, Hank and Junichiro look like maybe Hank's grandfather. And, like, maybe Bobby looks more like a plumper, younger Cotton. Not just they're short, but, like, maybe. And maybe his, I don't know. I'm grasping at straws here.
I mean, you're right. Maybe, I mean, we'll find out because it's, I don't know, because Bobby does look like Cotton a lot, so it's clear that there is some genetics there. I don't know, maybe the looks skip a generation or something. Maybe the Cotton Hill looks skip a generation. They jump out of trade, and, you know, Junichiro's all nervous, you know, because this could ruin his career, this could ruin his life if it ever gets known that his biological father spit in the Emperor's face. But, you know, Hank's like, don't worry, the Hill brothers are on it. And then Hank's kind of like, Dan, can this train go any faster? And then he sees that it's going 186 miles per hour, and he's like, oh, they're on the Shinkansen, the bullet train. So they're heading down to Kyoto, and they're trying to get in, and Hank's just, you know, pushing his way through, and Junichiro's trying to be polite, and, you know, excuse me, or Simeonsen. I can never pronounce it as well as I'd like to. But anyway, he is lagging behind Hank, and Hank's getting upset. So Hank kind of gives him a look, and then, you know, he yells out, Kikuyasu! And then so everybody kind of like parts like the Red Sea and lets Junichiro through. They try to get in through the gate so that they can get up to Cotton, who's now already on. Cotton's like at the end of the stage of, you know, there's a line of different soldiers, Japanese and American, but the Emperor is kind of given all medals and whatnot. And, you know, Cotton is like, you know, starting to build up a loogie and get prepared to spit it at the Emperor. And then all of a sudden, you know, the guys are trying to get up and get him to stop. They're trying to get in, and the guard won't let them in. And then, of course, Junichiro tells the guard that Hank is Tom Brokaw, and they let him in right away, which I guess was funny. And Hank calls him like a sneaky bastard, which was kind of a funny thing to say too. They get up to Cotton. Hank tries to stop him, but then Junichiro is actually able to stop him by saying, you know, I learned there's no shame in the Hill family, and I learned from, you know, I'm proud to be a Hill and stuff. And then Emperor shows up, is there to give him his medal, and then Cotton relents, swallows his loogie, and he says that he has no hard feelings against the Japanese for his war injuries and everything, and he even introduces his sons to the Emperor. Everybody returns back to the hotel, everybody's packing, getting ready to leave, all that good stuff. Peggy is bringing in a Japanese or a Tokyo phone book as a souvenir, which is probably going to be over the, or not, if not over, at least close to the 50-pound limit, but who knows, of the bag. It's definitely going to help put her over. Cotton apologizes to Michiko and gives her the picture that he's been keeping all these years as a memento. She rips it in half and gives Cotton the half that has a picture of her while she keeps the half that has a picture of him. And yeah, they, you know, it's showing that she accepts the apology and wants to keep remembering him, and for better or worse, which is really nice. Peggy mentions how small the Japanese hotel rooms are, and it's kind of like the big kicker of the episode, because Junichiro looks inside the hotel room and is like, surely you didn't spend your entire vacation in the sitting room. And then, you know how the Japanese, traditional Japanese rooms have like the sliding paper doors or whatever. So he slides the door and just reveals this like massive suite that they didn't even know that they had. And like on it is like a fruit basket that's welcoming them in, and the fruit is all rotten, fruit flies flying around and stuff. So I actually felt for them, because I was thinking to myself, man, I'd feel like an idiot if I was spending my entire hotel taking a shower in the sink and everything. I was spending my entire vacation in the sitting room of my room when there was like this whole other thing.
I mean, I don't know. I feel like someone should have said something, right? Shouldn't have the person who led them to their room?
Yeah.
Been like, that's a not a wall.
Or like when they do the cleaning service or something, somebody should have noticed that like they left blankets on the desk and on the table, or in that nothing had been touched in the other room and been like, and just left the door open. Of course, then we wouldn't have gotten that scene at the end, but it's like, there were a lot of opportunities for that to not happen.
Or smell the rotting fruit, right?
That's true too. But yeah, it's funny. Meanwhile, actually, we'll check up on Bill and Dale again. So actually, what happens while all of this fantastic stuff in Japan is happening, kind of a side story, Luann is walking the two dogs, and she's like trying to come up with an excuse to explain this away to Hank. It's like, oh, I learned how to clone at the college. Now you guys back me up. As they're walking, she notices that there are people in Hank's house. So she calls the police, and the police show up. They knock down the door, and they arrest Dale and Bill. And as they're being led to the police car, you know, Dale's yelling at Boomhauer, who's just enjoying a beer. And instead of yelling at him to like, oh, come on, help us, or bail us out, or whatnot, he's like, Boomhauer, remember to take in Hank's newspaper. And then Boomhauer's like, yo. And so that was kind of funny, because you'd expect him to say, Boomhauer, get us out of that. But instead, he's just like, please make sure you take care of Hank's papers.
Well, I mean, that's important, because that's, you know, I feel like they never want to fail Hank, and like, this is the responsibility he gave them.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, he gave them a pretty easy job, and they screwed it up, so what are you going to do? So for some of the final scenes, they are all four in the taxi heading over to the airport. Cotton notices that Bobby's looking at the little pictures he got from the photo booth, and, you know, it's like, hey, what you got there? A picture of your war bride or whatever? I forget what the exact term he uses, but he uses something to that effect. And then Bobby's all forlorn, and he's like, I never got a chance to say goodbye. And then Cotton's like, what? And he starts kicking the back of the driver's chair to get him to stop the car. And Hank's like, what's going on? And he's like, this is about love. You won't understand. And so he encourages Bobby to go and find the girl. I guess they were lucky that they happened to stop the car right by the arcade. And they see the girl. And the episode ends on Bobby dancing Dance Dance Revolution with that girl. Which I think is a sweet thing. Not just the Bobby part, but the fact that Cotton like was like, no, I'm not going to let you leave Japan without saying goodbye to her, because Cotton went through the similar thing.
Yeah, it's fun seeing kind of, we didn't notice the parallel, but then there's like that parallel to that at the end. And it's a great Bobby's like side story too. Like, you know, Bobby having fun on his trip.
Yeah, I agree. That was very nice, because Bobby had his whole side story. He found a little girl to have a crush on and got to explore the arcades, which is, you know, if I were a 13-year-old boy in Japan, I'd probably be doing the same thing. But yeah, it was just, it's a heartwarming end to the episode. You know, everything kind of worked out at the end. You know, Junichiro is all right with being a hill, and he forgives his father. Michiko forgives Cotton as well. Cotton kind of gets his closure. Bobby finds a little girlfriend. Cotton kind of shows more of his warm side. It was just a nice end to an episode.
Oh, yeah. And these two episodes, like the hills going to Japan, is like just so much fun. And it's a little breather away from like the craziness in Ireland, and you kind of see like them have this cool side adventure, and learning more about Cotton is always interesting.
Seeing like a better side of Cotton too is nice. Like not seeing the angry old man who like we saw in an earlier episode, Shins of the Father, who's super misogynistic and racist and problematic in so many ways. It's nice to actually see that he has a heart underneath all that. Makes you wonder like, what was the deciding factor? And you might have made a good point earlier, like, maybe had he stayed behind with Japan and had a domestic life with her and whatnot, things would have been different. Who knows? Like, maybe that was the point that broke for him. I don't know.
And we'll never know, but it's fun to imagine.
It is. He's an interesting character nonetheless, but yes, it is fun to imagine. But yeah, I like this episode. You know, I'm not always the biggest fan of two-parters because I hate cliffhangers just as a general rule. Because, you know, it's like, oh, you get that cliffhanger and you're like, oh, I want to see what's next. And then you have to wait another week or 2 weeks or whatever. So I don't know. This one was definitely worth the wait when it originally aired. And of course, now that it's on DVD and all that stuff, we don't actually have to wait. We can watch it immediately. But yeah, this is a very, very heartwarming episode. Actually, probably for everybody but Peggy. Well, now that I think about it, because Peggy's the only one who doesn't really have like an arc in the story. You know, Bobby meets that little girl, Cotton gets closure, Hank meets his long lost brother, all that stuff. There's not really much for Peggy in this episode, but that's all right too.
She gets the phone book.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Everyone wins this episode.
Yeah, and she got to go to the Disney store in Hong Kong. Hong Kong. She got to go to the Disney store in Tokyo, which I don't know. I guess it's. I'm sure it exists. Oh, you know what? I have actually been to a Disney store in Tokyo in Harajuku. There's a Disney store.
Oh, interesting. I can't think of Harajuku without thinking of Gwen Stefani.
I guess so. That definitely did kind of bring that term to us non-Japanese people. It brought that term to us. What is it? Rich Girl? Is that the song?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a nice little area. It's like very, I'm trying to think of like the right word for it. It's a very lively place and it's like filled with a bunch of weird cross cultures, if you will. It's like you'll go there and you'll see like the people dressed in like anime clothes. And then there's also like people dressed as rockabillies, and then of course there's all the shopping there. You can get all these different foods and clothing and random gear and stuff. So it's a really zany area, if you will. And for whatever reason, they have a Disney store there.
I'll have to check it out whenever I go.
Yes, it's definitely a place you should go to. Japan is, you know, not to sound like a weeb or otaku or anything, it is actually a very nice place to visit. It is very, you know, in my experience, pretty peaceful, pretty nice. It's like a place, like, I'm not even joking. You could like leave your wallet on a table and it will still be there when you come back, like after going to the bathroom or whatever. It's like a very safe country. Food's good. The people are pretty polite and nice and everything. Food being good is definitely a win for me because I don't think I could travel anywhere that has bad food. You know, nice little scenery because it's a mountainous country, you know, especially if you go to Nagano and whatnot. It's a really nice place. Cherry blossoms, if you happen to be in there in April and you go to Kyoto, that is definitely a sight worth seeing. But yeah, I think...
For sure. Yeah. Well, I have to get with you whenever I plan that trip.
Yep, I'll be happy to share my Google Maps trek and everything, let you know where good places to head to and whatnot. But yeah, I think that's all I've got. How about yourself?
Yeah, I think two great episodes. A great two-parter, I mean.
Yes, and next week we are going to go back to single episodes, or at least for a while. We will be doing Halloween, so looking forward to covering that. I think another season one episode. So until then, I'm Jason.
I'm Jimmy.
Bye.
Bye.